pēnā koutou katoa. Nō Ngāti Porou, me Ngāpohi, ko Becky Kittle tēnei. This podcast is produced by the ACO team for Kāinga Tahi, Kāinga Rua Research Project as part of Building Better Homes, Towns and Cities National Science Challenge. Today we're going to be talking with three researchers in the Kāinga Tahi, Kāinga Rua Research Program. Anahira Rawiri from Ngāti Whātua o Rāke, Irene Kiriama-Royal and Roe Hoskins from Unitech. Ngāti Whātua o Rāke, a tribe in the centre of Auckland, have been exploring a number of housing options over the past few years. Most recently, they opened a medium-density housing Papakāinga development on their land, but they want to go further. Today we're talking about their explorations into the notion of a vertical Papakāinga and what that means for the 21st century.
Ko mainga kia kia te maunga, ko ai te mata te moana, ko mahuhu ki te rangi te waka, ko Ngāti Whātua te iwi, ko te tau ngā oho me te uringutu oku hapu, ko rākei te marae, ko te mutumu whirua, te whare tukuna, ko anihira rauri tōku engo.
Roe Hoskins, Ngāti Hau, Ngāpuhi, Director of Design Tribe Architects and Lecturer in Architecture at Unitech. And for the purposes of this project, I am a researcher for the Kāinga Tahi, Kāinga Rua and Building Better Homes, Towns and Cities National Science Challenge.
Irene Kiriama-Royal, tōku ingoa. Ngāpuhi parehaura ki Ngāti Raukaua te autonga me tū whare tōku iwi. Mari te puaki au ki roto o te waka o Tainui ki Waikato me Pare Hauraki. And I work as a consultant slash researcher part-time with the Ngā Waia Te Tui Research, Māori Research Centre there at Unitech.
So we wanted to understand why Ngāti Whātua o Rāke were interested in and even exploring the idea of a vertical Papakāinga.
Ngāti Whātua had a very important historical association with the 700-acre original Ōrākei block that Api Haitikawo said that would be inalienable. So he was happy to share tamaki with the settlers, but the Ōrākei block was always to be there for the Kāinga. It was strategic. It was the entrance for the Waitemata. So the land that Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei have had returned and bought back within that original Ōrākei block is like Israel. In other words, they want to fit as many people as they can into that site. The unitary plan allows for quite a lot of density and height in Ōrākei, and they have actively lobbied for that in the unitary plan, and even prior to the unitary plan, both for their investment purposes and to get as many people as they can into the original Papakāinga site.
Housing is quite up there in terms of priorities for Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, because our Papakāinga is so close to Wānau Marae and to employment opportunities. The city, which, you know, brings good economic prosperity, should you live near or be able to access all of these, have better access to these types of opportunities. So Ōrākei is where we have most of our land holdings through purchasing back from Crown entities like Housing New Zealand, but also through our treaty settlements in terms of Pōrewa and Whenua Rangatira, of course, which was through the protest movement of Bastion Point, 1978. Now, that's all these land holdings have helped to strengthen, you know, what was lost and how we are today. And so in terms of the why it's important for us to look at vertical Papakāinga is, you know, internally as a hapu, we acknowledge that we have to think innovatively about how we live on that land, on our land, you know, so that we can make really good use of the whenua that we have. So with kāinga, which was medium density, you know, what was on the site that we built kāinga tuatahi on were like 10 state houses. We managed to turn 10, you know, and that's like two-bedroom and three-bedroom state houses attached, you know, so it was like three blocks of homes. And what we were able to turn that site on, site into were 30 homes, but that's a mixture of four-bedroom homes that can be five-bedroom homes, two-bedroom and three-bedroom homes. So that's 30 homes that we were able to build on that site.
Wow.
In terms of a number count of people that lived on that land prior to kāinga, there was like 20 people living on that land. Now, 145.
Wow.
So when you look at the impact that medium density housing can have for to strengthen our papa kāinga, you know, we've been able to, through this exercise, you know, really see benefits for our community.
So what is a vertical papa kāinga? We put this question to the researchers, and definitions focused on two key things. Firstly, the physical structure, and secondly, more qualitative things like being with whānau.
A vertical papa kāinga is a group of dwellings on ancestral land which seeks to maximise the unitary plan capacity for height and density, while maintaining critical connections to whenua.
A vertical papa kāinga is a papa kāinga that is stacked. So, and almost like if you were to translate that, probably like an apartment.
Right.
But what's different about a vertical papa kāinga is the thought and the values that are incorporated in such a concept. You know, it's not just an apartment block, it's a papa kāinga. So how do we, through this process, have conversations about our values and how they're incorporated in living this way? So for us, when we looked at this entire concept, it's on our whenua. It will be lived in by our people. So, you know, the concept of whānau, marae, papa kāinga, you know, it's still very close to our marae. But when we've looked at what makes a papa kāinga, it's whānau, it's whakapapa, it's manaakitanga. You know, it's all these things that we really value as Māori and as Ngāti Whātua, and how do we incorporate that in a modern-day structure.
Anuhira highlights the fact that vertical papa kāinga is not a new concept for Ngāti Whātua or Rākei.
It's not a new concept for us. Maunga Kiaki was one of the densest vertical living arrangements in the Southern Hemisphere, with over 5,000 people living on that maunga at one time, where our Maitupuna Tupiriri resided. So, you know, these concepts aren't new, but I suppose in modern day context, it's new. So, you know, it's about sort of looking at our histories and maybe bringing those forward for discussion.
So what was the research trying to find out?
So the research question is really how can a vertical papa kāinga be designed to meet cultural, social, economic and environmental aspirations of Ngāti Whātua or Rākei? And then the sub-questions were, what is the history of vertical and density living for Ngāti Whātua or Rākei? So where have we come from? And, of course, the Okahu Bay kāinga up until 1952, when it was demolished, was a dense community.
I asked Roa a little bit more about density, given density and living compactly is a key driver of much of government policy today with respect to designing our cities.
I think what's been important is that all Māori had lived densely in the past. Our kāinga were quite densely populated, but they sat within vast tribal domains. So you lived tight, but you roamed broadly. So what we've done is we've got the same tribal domain, which is big as a suburb, say, and we've spread ourselves out into and mixed ourselves into that suburb. So we're mindful that it's not easy to suddenly say, oh, well, we've lived that way but in the past, let's just do it again, because we have lost many of the complex social systems that that allowed us to build live more densely, and the ability to have elders involved in conflict resolution, the ability to have tolerance for people living in close proximity, the ability for your cousin's business to be your business, and not be seen as a burden, but as, you know, well, that's just the reality. Mm. The whole aspect of muru, where, you know, the transgression of your cousin was your transgression, and you had to front up. You had to pay if your cousin ran off with someone else's wife. That's a feature of Māori kāinga living up until the early 1900s.
Right.
Well, my great grandfather, you know, somebody stole a pig, and he said, well, everyone's got to pay.
I asked Irene what the other findings were in their project.
So central themes that came out early, because there were some that came out later. Mm. Central themes came out early were safety, community, space efficiency, sharing of living costs and connection and living orientation to the marae as the kāingatahi.
Mm.
A key idea in the findings was to ensure the spatial design of such a vertical papakāinga would provide opportunities for ongoing community creation.
So things around conjuring a community, sense of community, even though you're in separate units.
Sure.
So things like having space for overseas whānau to stay for a weekend if they're over for a wedding or a birthday or a tangi inside papakāinga. Things like having, closed roads and particular walkways that are safe so they can still be seen from the apartments for children and old people to walk, like in a circuit, and still be observed and still be supervised. And things like what Ana Hira talked about, the connection between the people, the whenua, the waterfront, the marae, so the external environment was still just as important as the vertical papakāinga itself.
Additionally, the vertical papakāinga necessarily includes some communal facilities which help to bring people together. And in this particular situation, there is the laundromat, which is designed to service the marae as well. Also, to be commercially viable, would service the wider community, but the papakāinga residents would have their own swipe card, their own discounted rate. It's also a way of controlling what detergents go back into the environment, at least through the laundry process, so that they can say, well, we've done our research, this is the only powder that will be used in this laundromat. We can't control your shampoo, but, you know.
Yeah.
But we might sell you one cheap, you know. Yeah. So, and then there's the office hub, homework centre. There's the lap pool and gym. There is the outdoor area and the cafe, playground and cafe. Again, the cafe is both public and private. Additionally, they want to keep several units for Australian cousins or country cousins who want or need time in the city. So that if they can afford it, they'd like to keep some flexible Airbnb type booking rooms on theoretically on the ground floor.
However, providing for opportunities for community to happen didn't exclude the need for privacy.
So we've got to look to preserve quite a lot of privacy within these developments to allow people to be private when they want to be private, but to provide incentives through communal facilities to encourage people to be more communal. And I think it's normally the kids become the glue. The kids are always the glue in these developments. So if you can provide for the kids on the ground floor with outdoor play areas, which is supervisable from kitchen environments, with homework centres, with cafe and so on, then I think the kids are going to provide a lot of connectivity for the adults. Some of whom who haven't lived at Orake, I mean, there's quite a lot of people who have moved into Kāinga who never grew up there, and it's a bit confronting for them, even within the environment they're in now.
Relatedly, Irene talked about the importance of understanding the social issues that could arise when living in this new vertical papakāinga type living situation.
Certainly a very strong theme, if you like, or ongoing discussion around how to manage social issues.
Okay.
And how to look at, you know, different social models or success stories, whereby stereotypes can be broken down, whereby even ideas, attitudes and behaviours of individual whānau, how they behave inside a unit, you know, next to two other whānau on each side of them, how that behaviour impacts other whānau, so noise and those kinds of things, noise and activity that, you know, so areas for barbecues, for instance, so that independent living can be respected, but also shared living is, you know, front of mind.
Whilst intergenerational living was a key concern highlighted by some of the participants, some of the findings are not quite what you'd expect.
Social issues also included how to appropriately and carefully and adequately provide for housing kaumātua in their years as they age. So aged care and what that might look like in terms of where they occupy, you know, different units, whether it's, you know, high up or close to the floor, whether it's next door to their adult children, whether it's then migrating them into a bigger unit with their adult children when they can't live independently. Those kinds of issues were always a consideration in the discussions. We talked to the kaumātis. they were probably saying, I won't say all of them, but they were probably saying, we don't want to live by our kids.
It was a little bit of a mythbuster, you know, wasn't it?
Yeah. And we sort of go, oh, okay. Right.
What, so they wanted their own space? They didn't want to...
They wanted their own space and they wanted maybe one spare bedroom for when mokopuna comes.
Just one. Yeah.
Just one, the favourite one. Yeah. And certainly not thinking about when they were going to go and live with their adult children. Yeah, not at all. But there was a lot of discussion up front about how to look after kaumātua in a better way. And so it was more about not wanting to see kaumātua put in rest homes, not wanting to see those kaumātua who have early dementia, whose care can be managed by whānau, to be doing that appropriately and proactively, you know, and incorporated, how to incorporate that into those communal facilities and the design of the, you know, the closed walkway or the safe walkway where several whānau can observe them as they're walking around.
Participants were keen to uphold their role as kaitiaki over the whenua, and much of the talk focused around how sustainability might be incorporated into the papakāinga development.
The next thing that came through was definitely strong talk about sustainability considerations and how they could be incorporated into the design, into the physical environment, on the roof, with waste management, with water management. There was talk about electric vehicles and fast chargers. There's talk, of course, about incorporating the new nursery that's been plant nursery that's being planned in close proximity, and how that can be utilised to get people exercising, moving outside, involved in growing kai both for the marae and for their homes, and that conjuring up of community is directly seen as being directly related to sustainability considerations.
The design concept offers opportunities for residents of this vertical papakainga to be kaitiaki, supporting and maintaining food gardens at every level.
Well, I think the food gardens as a way of tying people back to food production and the way that they cascade down to ground level is a really important design move, as opposed to making people go on a lift or a stairwell, that there is another way of transitioning around up to the various levels and down to the ground as well. So that's probably something that which I think is going to be important to see if we can maintain in the final designs, to see if we can make it stack up in terms of security and safety and all of that stuff. And the way I think it will work is that each marakai will have a kaitiaki rōpū. And so that, you know, we might be the kamokamo level, or you might be doing the whatever you're doing, you know. And so that you've got kaitiaki who've got a level of control over those marakai. So it's not a free for all. There are tikanga associated with each of those levels. Yeah.
Finally, I talked with the researchers to discover what key findings might be useful for others wanting to develop vertical papakainga.
What we've found is that we don't think that the design dimensions that we have included are particularly relevant just to Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei. We think that most of the design moves that have been made had been reasonably generic to Māori. In other words, the desire for intergenerational living, the desire for after-school care for tamariki, security for overlooking, security of playing areas, desire for some car garaging, but an emphasis on electric bikes and public transport, which is quite good in Ōrākei. I mean, in fact, you could use a Lion scooter from Ōrākei quite easily to Varsity. No problem at all, you know, with the gradients and the distances that you've got. In fact, you could have a fleet of your own Ngāti Whātua scooters. They'd probably end up in the apartments. So. We think there's a lot of applicability to other iwi, and that's why this book chapter that we're completing, we think, is going to be of interest to a number of urban iwi. Yeah.
I think to be, you know, for our people to be really bold and brave, you know, because these, I'll call them structures, but, you know, these homes and our communities, you know, they'll be there for a long time. And you know, to be bold, when we started with the one that we've just done, kainga, which is a medium density, as I understand, the first medium density Papakāinga project in the country. And, you know, that took a while for people to get used to living that way. And now, you know, when people come to have a look at it as an exemplar, you know, our whānau that are living in there say, oh, these are too big, you know. But prior to them being built, you know, it was not enough room. I need a front yard, I need a backyard. Yeah. So it's actually about having these, like I said, these kōrero amongst our whānau about what this all means for us long term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this front yard, backyard thing, you know.
Yeah.
All of these things are now sort of bubbling to the surface that, you know, if we have really strong core values when it comes to looking at the way we utilise our whenua, some of these myths about having my own space, you know, we might be able to work through those because, you know, the implication is if we actually make the houses a little smaller, a little more denser, we could get two more houses on the site.
Yeah,
or, you know, if you didn't want your front yard and your backyard, you know, that might be another, you know, could put some more houses on there.
Sure.
You know, if you didn't have four cars, a house, you know, we could actually utilise that for a bike track for the kids, you know. So, you know, it's about, I think, being bold and innovative about the utilisation of our resources because they are finite, you know. And I think that's, from our perspective, you know, that's where we're really pushing, trying to push those boundaries because because of the land as a resource. We're really open to sharing sort of the journey that we've taken, especially, you know, one of the things that is unique too is we can track, you know, we started in 1951 with being wards of the state when they booted us off Ōkahu Bay up to Kitimana Street. Then we got those houses back and we rented them. You know, we owned them from 1978 onwards as a rental. So we've got rentals and then we did license to occupy. So we've got lots of models where we're able to really look at that as a suite of options that we've been able to provide and actually where we can tweak and, you know, find things that suit a wide range of whānau that are on that housing continuum, right from rental all the way through to home ownership on your land. And now, you know, with the research that we're doing, you know, this is all just sort of pushing that boundary a bit further about how we can, you know, they're now tools that we can start measuring success and quality of life around these types of developments. So that whole tracking and measuring is going to be so important for us in terms of setting our strategies for our people as we move forward. Do the vertical papakāinga project. I think from Māngai Te Whātua Ōrākei perspective is that these things are becoming quite real for us in terms of the need that we're seeing in our community. So doing this research project gets us prepared for what lays ahead in terms of our housing aspirations and developing on our whenua. This is a really good foundation for us in terms of moving forward because did we think about those things when we did our previous housing developments? No, you know, so, you know, all of these themes that are coming out now are applicable to a vertical papakāinga research project but are also just applicable to how we live with one another.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things too that I find quite interesting is how we have conversations about living together. You know, cars, in Ōrākei, you know, I think the average number of cars per household is 2.5. You know, so, and one of our houses, there's six cars. You know, one house, six cars. You know, so cars are a huge issue for us. It's a challenge, but it's a mindset. You know, so through this research, there are things there that we can start having much more broader conversations about that. Like you said, impacts on the environment, impacts on roading, pedestrians, you know. And so all of these things are sort of connected. So what the themes that have come out, you know, it just sort of gives us a really nice broad platform to be able to have open conversations about the way we live now and into the future. and cool. keeping those these themes alive so mm. that, you know, our kōrero is fresh and considered mm. when we move into new areas around housing and community. One of the for our kāinga tuatahi development in Ōrākei of the 30 homes that we've built, we're really proud that almost 80% of our whānau kōrero Māori. So that's a really key wellbeing indicator for us as we move forward in terms of the value that we place on te reo in our community. So we have lots of, you know, whare reo Māori within our hapori, and, you know, I think it lends itself to act as an exemplar for our whānau, that, you know, our language is treasured and it will live within our community into the future.
Whakaaria mai was sung by the Rauawaawa Olympics attendees, and Whakataka te hau was sung by the Geography Waiata Group.